Hi, welcome back to Lightline. I'm your host, Lisa V, and I'm here in the studio with Stephanie Foy. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Very well. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad I finally got you. Yippee! So, here we are. Tell me and tell our listeners a little bit about your journey. I'd love to talk about the firewalking, but let's talk first about your journey with MS, because that was really pretty significant in your life.
That is what took me through the fire first. Absolutely. So I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, chronic progressive, in 1996. And after working with traditional medicine for about a year, I was given a prescription for a wheelchair. And I was sent home with not very good prospects. I had three young children that I was raising on my own at the time, was dealing with a great deal of depression, and had lost the vision in my left eye and no longer able to stand or to walk. Life became pretty challenging. Through a series of suggestions and in really searching for what the next piece was going to be, I found craniosacral therapy. And my first session of craniosacral therapy, I thought, this person barely put their hands on me. They barely touched me. It was more expensive than any traditional therapy or any other therapy I'd ever received. And I went home from that session thinking, what a hoax. What a bunch of junk. Didn't do much. Only that night, I noticed that I slept more soundly than I'd been able to sleep for the past year, that this burning sensation in my hip had dissipated to a place where I could be comfortable when I laid in bed that night. And some part of me decided to keep the next appointment. And I went back, and I went back, and I went back. And through my journey with craniosacral therapy, I began to take a look at the emotions that were stored in my body and all that had contributed to this diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. When I began working with that, my physical body was responding in spades, and I began getting well bit by bit. And it certainly wasn't an overnight, and it wasn't anything that any practitioner did to me or for me, but it was a really good, hard look at what we store inside of our bodies and what we also hold as capacity to heal.
So when you found cranio, were you looking, did you know beforehand what that practice was supposed to, what effects that practice was supposed to have, or you had no idea what kind of?
I had no idea, Lise. Mm. I received a phone call from a woman who I knew peripherally. We didn't really know each other very well. And she called me one day and said, you know, I haven't seen you around. We used to run into each other fairly regularly. And I wonder how you are. And in sharing with her what had been going on with me, that I was no longer able to drive, she made a really generous offer. And she offered to come and get me. She lived about 45 minutes away. And to take me to her physical therapist. And I thought how kind she was. However, this wasn't a physical therapy issue.
Right.
And it really wasn't. I didn't see how that was going to help. And because of the nature of her generosity, and when I could really hear her heart pouring out that she wanted to do this for me and was really sure that it was something that was going to be beneficial, I didn't want to shoot that down. And so uncharacteristically, I decided to accept her offer. And found myself on this craniosacral therapist's table who was practicing with a physical therapy license.
So you say uncharacteristically.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a certain characteristic of maybe not giving to yourself, not accepting?
Certainly there was. Certainly yeah. There was. It was much safer to be the giver than the receiver.
So this was really stepping out of the box.
It
on a
sure
lot
was.
Of different levels, even though it may sound like a simple offer.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you started doing cranio, and was it a subtle changes, or did you just wake up one morning and it was like, oh my gosh, I can see, I'm walking, I'm...
It was subtle, Lise. The first session, like I said, I experienced a deeper sleep that night, and some of the symptoms, like a burning feeling in my hip that dissipated fairly quickly. it didn't erase, you know, the host of other symptoms that I was dealing with, nor did I expect it to. It was really just kind of a nice surprise that there were benefits from the first session at all. I didn't know what to expect, but as I began to work further with a craniosacral therapist, I just started to really become aware of what these energies in my body were really all about. And then I began dreaming about what was happening in my sessions and realizing that my subconscious had something to say about this work that was being undertaken.
So were you journaling during this time? Were you writing down your thoughts and dreams and feelings after the sessions? Or
I was. Yeah, I did a fair amount of journaling.
It must be incredible to look back on those now.
You know, it's interesting. I feel so far removed from that at this point that, yeah, it's almost jarring to look back at some of those journals.
When was the first time that you realized you didn't need the wheelchair anymore? How long after you started doing the cranio?
I think it was probably 3 or 4 months after I began that journey. I wish that was documented a bit better, but at the time, you know, I didn't know exactly what I was documenting. I certainly didn't think that this very passive therapy was going to get me up and out of a wheelchair.
And of course, MS symptoms are different for everybody, right?
Or that's
are there
right.
Similar mm-hmm. symptoms that everybody experiences, or is this something that's unique to the individual?
I think that everybody with this diagnosis responds differently. And certainly there are similar characteristics, but everybody responds a bit differently.
So what was the next step? So you were finding out that you could walk, you felt better, you were sleeping better.
And so the next step was for me was I was so excited about what had happened in my own body. And what had awoken was this desire to understand what happened here. How did I get sick in the first place, and how did I get well? And I really was interested in learning the behind-the-scenes craniosacral therapy information. And it took me a long time before I was really physically well enough and emotionally well enough at that point to undertake that program.
How old were you when you were first diagnosed?
I was 26.
Wow. That's incredible. So here we are, and we're going to fast forward to your current position of being teacher of craniosacral and your practice, your daily practice, and your mission to bring this to all different kinds of illnesses and imbalances, to help people to discover how this helps them. And I know you're very intuitive as well, because I've personally experienced your healing qualities. And I wonder how you can keep your own health in balance while you're doing craniosacral. Do you get craniosacral yourself continually?
I do. And I think that everybody, no matter what it is that we do, particularly in the healing field, really need to make self-care at the top of our priority list.
So when did you start becoming a teacher rather than a participant and a patient?
I think it was just the desire to really reach more people, and it was a desire to understand the material that it was that I was applying. And so in learning all of that, there were more and more people requesting for me to help them understand what was happening, and teaching became a natural evolution.
Was it difficult for the people that were around you that were watching you with MS and then watching you as a healed, whole person again, able to take care of yourself? And I mean, how did your family and friends respond to
So as you're asking
this journey.
Yeah, as you're asking that, my oldest son, Scott, tells some really wonderful stories. Scott has become an integral part of most of the firewalks that I teach, and he's become the guy that sits next to me and says, "I remember when." And it's been just so so beautiful for me to hear. Through his eyes, he was a young person whose mom was not able to do for him what moms should be able to do for their children. And it was difficult. He was really angry with me for a good long while, and rightfully so. But to hear him and his joy in watching that unfold has just been a real teaching for me. It definitely affects anybody who has an illness, knows how much it affects the people around you.
I know that in recent years you also got into massage, and you were doing massage for a long time, which is how I met you, and you were an incredible healer at that point as well. And you've moved away from that practice. I know that also from what I've seen, you're also very intuitive, and you pick up on information when you're doing healing and craniosacral with people. How is that? How did that come about?
So I think that, you know, the body has its own language, and it's no different than reading. You read astrology, you read the stars, and I read the body. And I think that we all have that ability, and we all decide where we want to apply it. And so some people like to read textbooks, and some people like to read bodies, and it just happens to be something that's not as visually accessible, but certainly on a kinesthetic level, all of the information is right there.
Did that gift come to you through cranio, or did it come through in massage school, or did you know it long, long, long time ago?
I think that there had been some communication, certainly with the natural world from the time that I was a child, communication with people that had passed, things that I really had no language for or hadn't really discussed with anybody until there were other healers in my life that I could say, ah, this is what they're doing and this is what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm. So you were a born shaman, a born seer in the dark, and then you became a shaman? Did you actually, you do the seeing with the heart?
I did seeing with the heart. You know, the word shaman is so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it conjures up this mystery of this black cloak and people doing things at midnight. Right.
I think we like to apply that to a very far away place or a very hidden
Amazon
aspect.
Right.
Yeah. Shamans come from far, far away and they do all of this dark magic.
But all it simply means is a seer in the dark, right? Or one
right.
who bridges the worlds
that's
between
right.
the physical and non-physical.
That's right. They take what's not ordinary and bring it to the ordinary.
So your shamanic practice helped with, and you're also a kinesiologist, is that correct?
Yes, mm-hmm. I utilize kinesiology.
Right, and mycology? Myology?
Myology.
And myology.
Kinesiology and myology was part of the massage practice program and just a piece of what we were taught in that program.
So all these practices put together, and you also have the gift of being able to tune into people on a deeper level when you're working on them. And after a session with you, take me through the steps of somebody who may be ill that's listening out there and they want to try, like you did, an alternative way of mm-hmm. of caring for themselves and exploring, a different way of handling their illness. They make an appointment with you. They come in and go through that with me.
It's really individual depending on what the person has in mind for a goal. We can work on what's holding them back. We can look at what beliefs are being held in the subconscious. Whatever we bring to the conscious mind tends to lose power. The subconscious loses its power. So I like to work a lot with what the beliefs in the subconscious are. I like to work with the physical structure of the body as well, not rather than, and really look at the whole being. What's important in their life? What is it that they're wanting to see happen differently? And how can I best facilitate that?
So depending on the same with your journey, when you went in and you started seeing a little bit of improvement and mm-hmm. so you went back, an individual might see improvement immediately. It might take them a longer time, depending on how their beliefs are, how rooted they are, how far back they go, where they originated, what their expectations are for healing. And also, I would imagine it's very similar to many other illnesses, where if you are working in this realm and then you go back into the same situation,
that's right,
that created the difficulty to begin with, sometimes you have to make some pretty drastic changes in your life in order to get healthy. Is that correct?
That is absolutely right. And the commitment to change is really what's important. So if someone comes in and they're expecting me to do the work and they're going to go back into their life and do it all the same way and expect their physical body to react differently, that's just not, it's just not fair. So I ask that the people that I'm working with that really have a commitment to seeing some physiology change also is willing to do the work that's necessary. There's a lot of homework that goes on after a session. It's not about an hour nap on the table.
And sometimes those can be hard choices that some people are not willing to make.
That's absolutely right.
Right. Yeah. It's part of the free will, right?
That's right.
Aspect of being a human. And so let's talk a little bit about your firewalking. How did you get into firewalking, and when was your first firewalk? And in this life, I should say, because obviously you did it in many, many other lifetimes.
So I was introduced to firewalking when a friend of mine, dear friend Linda Finney, and I were having a conversation on the phone one night, and she shared with me an experience that she'd had at a firewalk she'd attended. And my whole body resonated, and I thought, this is medicine. And I didn't know what it was. She hadn't described the process to me. I just knew I was so deeply intrigued that I needed to go check it out. And I signed up for a firewalk that was happening near Albany, New York. And it was canceled due to low registration. And I went to this man's website. He was from Texas. And looked to see when he'd be coming again. And he had nothing scheduled. And I decided, okay, it's time to go. Where can I find a firewalk? I really, at that point, was needing
You're
a
driven fire.
And so I found the person that had taught him, and she was out in California. And I got on a plane and went to Northern California and did my first firewalk at what was called an initiation training with Peggy Dillon at Sundor. And it was life-altering, absolutely an amazing experience. The first time that I ever walked on fire, I had, mind you, gotten on a plane and flown to San Francisco and then driven 4.5 hours north and gotten out and walked in and went through her presentation. And then she clapped her hands and said, okay, let's head down to the fire.
That's
and
a I woman went, on a mission.
Oh, my God. What am I doing here? You mean we're going to walk on fire tonight?
Right away?
Not tonight. I'm not ready.
How much training do you need for something like that before?
You know, the firewalk programs that I offer, there's about a 4-hour preparation. So in that 4 hours, we really take a look at what is necessary for you to come to the coals and be successful. And we use fire as a metaphor for obstacles in our life. And we also use fire as the powerful element that it is, the healing capabilities that fire has and the ability to transform. So many different gifts of the fire and absolutely the preparation that's necessary. People think, I don't know how to do that. And you don't have to know. You just have to know that you may be called, you may feel some intrigue, you may feel skeptical, and you just want to see what it's all about. You want to see if there's some kind of coating on the bottom of the feet.
Yeah, right.
I really love it when people say, you coat your feet, right? Or you use special coals. And no, we don't use special coals. We build a fire of wood, whatever the local wood that happens to be available is, and we build it together so you all can see what goes into it. How big is the fire?
Yeah, how big is the fire? Is it long? Is it short? Is it a couple of feet? Is it 10 feet?
It really varies, Lise, based on the participants and where we are in the process. So firewalks vary from anywhere in 6 feet to length to 40 feet in length. Most firewalks where new people are coming to learn the process and work through some of their own fears are somewhere between 6 and 10 feet in length.
Now, are you holding hands with people when you do it? Are you in a single line? Are you doing it alone?
There's no protocol. You can play. Some people like to hold hands and go through it with another person that has a similar intention, or they just want to have some solidarity as they walk the coals. Some people like to walk alone in a silent prayer. Some people like to dance. We've had conga lines.
Sounds like a good ritual for a marriage.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yeah,
oh, marriage is a firewalk.
Yes. It would be wonderful. It would be a wonderful place to get married.
If we could get Liz Taylor
back
not
here
anymore.
On the coals. So in order to get people prepared to do something like that, is it do you take them inward? Do they focus on being one with the fire, one with themselves? Do they put – do they have to be intensely focused on feeling a certain thing or not feeling something or thinking something or not thinking something? I mean, where's the mindset?
So the mind is about – it's about focus, right? Fear is one of those emotions that really calls us to focus.
And we're
like
all
nothing
a little bit afraid
else.
Of walking across.
Which means our minds are working.
Yes.
You know? Those coals are hot. They're 1,200 to 1,500 degrees.
Wow.
And that's hot. And the mind says, what are you doing? And it is about focusing. It is about deciding to move forward in the face of fear and teaching our bodies a whole new way of responding to hesitation, a whole new way of responding to fear and to feeling like this is something I can't possibly do.
And so once you decide you can't possibly do it, you as the teacher, are there people that show up for these events that don't walk the fire? And
it's pretty rare. I mean, occasionally, yes. And absolutely, that's honored. It's not required that you walk the coals if you show up at a firewalk event. I often say that, you know, the benefits are there whether or not you walk. The processes that we do to prepare you to walk are really you will gain so much just from that. And if your intuition is telling you when you get to the coals, I really don't feel it. I don't feel like this is what I want to be doing, or I just want to witness. That's absolutely great. I mean, part of empowerment is about saying yes, and part of it is about saying no. So if your intuition is telling you no, that's absolutely honored. I do ask people check in and make sure that it's not your fear that's saying no, which is different than your intuition. And we talk a lot about how do we tell the difference between fear and intuition.
So you have about 4 hours of prep time where you're really working with people and they're tuning in and
that's
learning
right.
a little bit about the mindset that they need to do this. And how dangerous is something? I mean, what if somebody starts walking, you know, maybe 10 or 15 feet and all of a sudden in the middle of it there, they lose that ability to be able mm-hmm. to be in that mindset? And is there a chance mm-hmm. that they might get burned? Or
well, it's not a mindset so much. I mean, I know that some of us have just heard about Tony Robbins and what happened in California.
I didn't hear about that.
So Tony Robbins
I know Tony
okay.
Tony Robbins' work, but
he's
I didn't
a great
know.
Self-help guru.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
been around for 30 years. And part of his empowerment programs is firewalking. So most of the people that go through his training wind up doing a firewalk at some point. And a week and a half ago or so, he did a firewalk in California with 6,000 people. And 21 of the people were burned, and it was hugely reported in the media as a you know massive failure, and they must have been in the wrong mindset. And you know what I have to say about that is that the bigger story here is 6,000 people walked the coals, and 21 were burned. And by burned, what that really means is that you know we look in firewalking to equalize. So whatever your obstacle is, if you can raise your vibration, you can raise your energy higher than your obstacle, or at least equal to your obstacle, there is no problem. There is no obstacle. So we look to meet the fire with our own inner fire, with our own vibration that equals that place. And sometimes we hold parts of ourselves, we hold our breath because we're in fear, so our energy isn't moving. We retreat to those old stories or old beliefs of I can't, or I knew this was going to happen, all of those things that we tell each other or tell ourselves or we've been told. And that sort of blocks the flow of energy. And that's so there is some part of our body that's not getting our full vibration. So the fire in its elemental transformative beauty says, here, let me give you a little help with that. And if we are able then to take the energy that the fire's given us through the bottom of our feet and allow it to travel in its wisdom wherever it needs to go, it will do just that. And there is no place for the energy to pool at the bottom of the foot. If we retreat into fear and say, I just knew this was going to happen to me, damn it, I knew I was going to be burned, and we block it off. We if you can feel the difference in your body when you say, "Ugh, I knew this was going to happen," you can feel how you've constricted or retracted, and you're not allowing things to flow and move. And so the energy has nowhere to go but to pool on the bottom of the foot and become a blister. And certainly that is one of the risks of firewalking.
So it's a self-fulfilled prophecy almost, as if the belief in failure creates the failure.
It could be, and it's not that simple. It's often a huge blessing when you are given a gift from the fire in the form of a blister. You know, where was your mind at that moment? What was happening with you? Where in your body is it needed? We often utilize the reflexology chart and take a look at reflexology. For anyone who doesn't know, it's the bottom of the foot kind of holds a map to the rest of the body, the organs and systems of the body. And so, if you're given if you wind up meeting the fire and there's a place that the fire gives you a burst of energy and you can see something on the bottom of your foot, we take a reflexology chart and see where did you need a bit of energy. And people are always, as far as I'm concerned, able to have some kind of a connection to that and say, oh, yes, of course, that was my shoulder. I've had bursitis. Or, yes, that's...
Because the bottom of the feet, reflexology has to go along with this, because it's obviously walking on fire, you need your feet, and the feet have meridians in them and key points that point to specific organs, specific parts of the body. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at a blister, say, for instance, in the heel area, mm-hmm. compared to one that would be on your big toe, it would connect you to something that's going on in that part of the body.
Exactly.
Where there is a block or something.
Exactly.
And 21 people out of 6,000, how do 6,000 people do a firewalk? They do it all at once?
You know, I'm not sure exactly how he had that particular event structured, but I believe that he had several walks set up at once.
Mm-hmm.
And probably many facilitators at each event.
Yeah. How does somebody find a firewalk if they are interested in doing that? Because I know that you do a number of them throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Can they go to your website? Do you post it on your website?
I do post them on my website. And my website is dimensionsinhealing.org.
Or people can call you.
Or people can call me. My number is 802-380-3306. And if you'd like to find me on Facebook, you can also find me under Dimensions in Healing. And often the events are posted there as well.
Some of us will have to look up Dimensions and
see how to spell it.
See how to spell it. It's dimensionsinhealing.org. And the other way that we can find you is, of course, you have a local practice here in Manchester, right?
I work on Richville Road in Manchester and in downtown Bennington in the Bennington Center for the Healing Arts, and also in Brattleboro.
Which is pretty great, because at one of those points, we're sure to catch up with you. Why don't we take a break for a couple of minutes, and we'll be right back with Stephanie Foy. Stay tuned. Hi, everyone. We're back with Stephanie Foy. I'm Lisa V with Lightline, and we're in the studios of WBTN here in the Green Mountains of Vermont. And we're talking about firewalking and craniosacral work. And now we're moving on to human shadow work. Steph, what's shadow work? Tell us a little bit about this mysterious practice.
So here on Lightline,
Lightline.
We're talking about the shadows.
Only the shadow knows.
So in our wholeness, we really hold both shadow and light. And we would be remiss if we didn't take a look at what aspects we hold in the darkness. So subconscious, what is below our consciousness? What have we not really taken a look at? And we know what those things might be based on how we show up in relationship, how we show up in business. You know, what are those places of our shadow that we come out sideways? So Debbie Ford has written a great book, and it's called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers. Really wonderful book if anybody's interested in exploring shadow work.
What was that again?
The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, and it's by Debbie Ford. And
great.
One of the places that you begin, I believe that she walks you through in some of her work, is what are the trigger words for you? So if I were to call you a name, I were to call you a liar, and it didn't land for you, and you thought, huh, okay. So that's probably not a shadow aspect of you. But if you felt kind of kicked a little bit by my calling you a liar, then that's probably a good symbol that you got some dishonesty there that's hanging out in shadow. And the way that we do shadow, I think, in our culture is to, we have an image. We have a part of ourselves that we want everybody else to see. And we spend a whole lot of energy and a whole lot of time shoving down what we don't want put out there. So what are you so afraid people are going to find out about you? What are you so afraid people are going to be thinking about you that you just tuck it so far down? That's a massive amount of energy that's available to you if you're really courageous and willing to bring that up into the room. I mean, let it out. Let it hang out, right? Take a look at it. Own it for yourself. And then taking a look at that can free up a tremendous amount of energy.
So if I were going to do shadow work with you, would I just sit there and call you names and then the first thing that
we could
really,
try that
really hit home?
We
or
could
as
try
my
that.
Mother said, if the shoe, my mother used to say, if the shoe fits, you know.
That's right. That's right.
If the shoe if fits, wear it.
If it's something you've heard a few times, it's probably a good indicator. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
I mean, how do you find out these keywords? You just look at them when people...
Shadow work is something that definitely we explore in the group process in firewalking. We take a look at that in a variety of ways, but it's really about your own ability to see those spots in yourself. It's not about somebody else choosing what your shadow is and deciding for you. It's really about you taking a fearless look, a fearless inventory of what's hanging out in this vessel that's going to be with you for the rest of your life. And how well do you want to get to know it? How honest can you be? How truthful can you be with yourself about who you are? And that old saying that most of us have heard of the who do you think you are? You know, the who do you think
you are?
Who do you think you are? Well, yeah, you know, because that really does become it, doesn't it?
Yeah,
the
it's
who
the
do you
story,
think you
the
are.
Story that you tell yourself.
The story you tell yourself. So how do you want to change that story and how do you want to make it true?
Or have you been telling yourself that story or have others been telling the story for you?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So taking that power back and saying, you know, who am I and who do I really want to be here? Who do I think I am? And
so what is that process? Do you do that yourself?
I do an element of that in one-on-one work when we're working in the craniosacral field, really taking a look at what are the subconscious beliefs? What are the aspects of self that are preventing you from really stepping out fully and living the life that you'd like to be living?
Mm-hmm. Which I guess is also part of the healing as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, that's pretty interesting. So you, while you're working with somebody, and of course, somebody may, you know, an individual might come to you having one particular problem, and you may find that the cranio isn't really their bag, but maybe the body work might be more up their alley, or maybe they're having better results with the shadow work. So there's a lot of different modalities that are combined here. When you are working with somebody, how do you decide, or does the individual decide? I mean, you don't have somebody come to work with you and they have a couple of sessions, and then do you follow up with them? Or do they say, well, this just didn't work for me. I don't think I'll go back.
I don't hear that much. And I guess it happens.
Yeah.
I know that from
my personal experience that I can't imagine that happening because I know you're wonderful.
Certainly, you know, there are different treatments for everybody out there, and there is no one right thing. I absolutely believe that. And generally, the way that I work is when someone comes in, we have a conversation really get to know what it is that this person's seeking. And that may shift and change throughout the course of our treatment together. And it may not. It may be that we're just deepening and finding, you know, we start with one thread and wind up following some others. But it's really, I like to work open enough so that you can come in without any expectations. But also, if someone has a goal, that's a really wonderful way to gauge whether this treatment's working for you or not. How is it affecting your daily life? This isn't, you know, it can be a luxury for some people, but most of the people that come through the door, they want to see a result. And I'd like to have them see a result.
Do you think that some of the people that come to you, maybe it's the first time that they've ever looked at a goal for themselves? Maybe people are out there that haven't really thought mm-hmm. about what their goals are or where they want to go. Maybe they're taking it a day at a time because of the pain that they're in or the inability to be able to see down the road.
Certainly. But I also think that something brings people to a table. You know, something is leading someone to make an appointment. And maybe it's not conscious yet, but mm-hmm. Often there's a goal in mind, whether it's as simple as I want to be heard when I say I'm tired at home or,
right.
you know, I want to stop having pain in my left ear. You know, it really varies for everyone. And a goal can be very simple or it can be really broad. And I want to be, you know, a multimillionaire in 10
right.
years.
Right. Yeah. Nothing's out of bounds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all personal.
And it's personal.
And when somebody walks into your office, describe the close on, close off? Do you sit? Do you lay down? I mean, how is the whole process for the hour that they're with you?
So I work with folks clothed, and usually we spend a few minutes in the beginning and at the end of each session talking, sitting in a chair, and then spend a chunk of time doing hands-on body work on the table.
Mm-hmm. Some people, hands-on body work is
craniosacral therapy.
But craniosacral, I would describe for the people mm-hmm. that are listening that have never had it. Where are your hands?
My hands, so craniosacral therapy, cranio being the head and sacral being the tailbone. So craniosacral therapy is really a whole body treatment. It's not just about the head. I generally start at the feet. And if it's the first time that we're working together, I have a bit of a protocol that gets followed. And I kind of work my way up the body, getting to know your tissues and your structure.
But you're not massaging. You're just touching.
No, it's a light touch. And there is some tractioning and some contact of the tissues itself. And you may feel that. But it's definitely not massage.
Well, from my personal experience, the first time I had cranio, I was like, what the heck is she doing? It doesn't feel like anything. It felt to me as if you were barely touching me.
Yeah, that's true.
And mm-hmm. I know that at one point my head was cradled in your hands and you were gently rocking my head and my neck.
Okay.
So that would be the cranio part of it. And then another part was your hand, one hand was on top and one hand was on the bottom of my spine.
Mm-hmm.
But your hands are there as if you were, what are you looking for? What are you searching for when you're doing that?
Well,
is it a pulse? Is it a...
There is a craniosacral rhythm. There's a rhythm different than the breath or the heartbeat in craniosacral work. There's also how the tissues are holding the bones, and then there's also the bones, and the bones themselves sometimes can be pulled by the tissue into a direction that's not optimal or comfortable. So you may be feeling a neck is tweaked, or you're having some lower back pain, or you're experiencing some nerve issues in your feet or in your hands.
So your massage practice and your previous experience of years of dealing with people's bodies and aches and pains and what have you has probably helped you a lot, because when they walk in the door, you can see how they're holding themselves, how they walk, when they're laying down, you feeling certain the physiology of the body picking up on certain muscular, is it a muscular tension? Is it a
muscular tension can be part of it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's connective tissue, and then there's bone and posture mm-hmm. and all those tricky places. And then there's emotion. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about how you hold your body when you're feeling sad, it's different than you hold the way you hold your body when you're feeling joyful. And those patterns get imprinted, and how the body unfolds itself in a craniosacral session is different every time. But
so it's an exchange of dialogue, and it's a gentle touching, clothes mm-hmm. on, and the individual is relaxed and they're laying there. Session takes about 45 minutes, an hour?
It's an hour.
It's an hour. And at the end of it, they're very relaxed.
That's the hope.
The hope. And then there is, a little bit of post-dialogue?
Mm-hmm. Post-dialogue and generally some suggestions or in some cases homework if we're working with a goal. And I'm usually available to contact after a session if someone's struggling or, you know, the subconscious is interesting. It will bring to the surface what it is it would like seen. Mm. And so often people describe, you know, working with their dreams after sessions and what is it that's brought to the surface by either returning images or dream time. And that's a nice place to begin working from.
Well, I remember a very long time ago laying on your table and hearing footsteps up over the, do you remember that?
Oh, in the Roost building.
In the Roost. And there was nobody up there. There wasn't supposed to be anyone up there. And I said, oh my gosh, that sounds exactly like my mother, heel to toe, walking up there. And that was a pretty...
Mom was showing up in the session.
She was showing up in the session. Well, listen, it's been great having you here, and I hope to have you back so you can tell us more about how your firewalking is going and filling people in from time to time about when the firewalks will take place and how you're doing with all of that.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
When is the next firewalk?
August 11th in North Bennington at 5:30.
And where in North Bennington?
It's at Spirit Hollow.
Oh, great. I love Spirit Hollow. Can people go to spirithollow.org and
certainly
and see mm-hmm. when the event is going to take place?
They can, and they should give me a call to register if they'd like to be there or with any questions.
All right. What's your phone number?
It's 802-380-3306.
You want to give that again?
Sure. 802-380-3306.
And are there any limitations or anything people have to know when they call you to sign up?
No, they can just give me a call at 802-380-3306, and I'll fill them in on the details.
That's great. Thanks so much for being here, Steph. Thank you for listening to Lightline with Lisa V. Tune in next Tuesday at 10 a.m. In the meantime, have a great week. Peace.